Committee on Elections and Rules on Friday, April 8, year 2005, at 4 p.m. in Hettner Grade School in Hettner, Oregon.
The Committee on Elections and Rules will come to order. Can you hear me okay out there? No? Can you hear me now? Just checking. New tractors.
You can't hear that one.
Try that one. Can you hear me now? Is that better?
What is this, a TV commercial?
Can you hear me now? Well, thank you, colleagues, and thank you, members of the audience, for being here today. It's great to be in the metropolis of Hettner. I've got to confess, it is my first time, but I'm hopeful that it will not be my last time. At this time, we will start with committee introductions. We'll start down here with Representative Mitch Kremnick.
Hi, it is indeed my pleasure here to be at the day late in a beautiful blue mountains. I represent House District 33, which is a district that begins at the river in northwest Portland and runs out into the wine country, getting right next to Cherry District in North Plains.
Thank you, Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Billy Dalto. I represent Oregon's 21st House District in Salem. It's mostly a northeast Salem seat and parts of South Salem in my second term. Thanks for having us here.
And Representative Paul Holby represents the Eugene area. He's on his way. Excuse me, I served with him also on the Business and Labor Committee. We left today at 11:15 to head over here. He had to testify on one of his bills at 11:30, so he should be joining us momentarily. I am the chairman. I am Representative Derek Kitts from Hillsborough. The chairman has to wear a suit and tie, so I realized that I was overdressing for the occasion, but I left my Wranglers in my dresser, but regrettably so. So thank you so much for having us here, and my co-chairman for this committee meeting, and also the chairman of the subcommittee on elections and rules, the distinguished Representative Greg Smith, who your community, I must tell you, is lucky to have him, and the state is lucky to have people with his work ethic. Greg was brought onto this committee, the subcommittee, and chair of the Campaign Finance Reform Committee because I had too much of a workload, and I leaned on Greg and I said, can you do this? He said, as if I don't have anything to do. I said, I'm going to ask you one more time, will you please do this? He says, absolutely. So he stood up for Oregonians across the rural urban divide and is a great voice for you guys in Salem. So with that, I'll let him introduce himself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you had him going until you used the word distinguished. They know better. It's good to be home. As a resident here in Morrow County and in Hettner, it always feels good when you hit about Ione and you start driving in and you start recognizing the homes of the folks that you know and you're close to. It's an honor to serve as chair of the subcommittee on campaign finance reform. It was also a little bit of a culture shock for me because I've never served on a policy committee. My entire time down in the legislature has been on ways and means, working the budget. And so I'm truly honored to serve at Chair Kitz's disposal in trying to bring transparency and reliability and ease of gathering information, if you will, for the public as we move forward in reforming the way campaign finance is conducted around the state. Just very quickly, I'd be remiss if I didn't say hello to my wife and to my young son, Alex, who was gracious enough to come, even though he wanted to stay home and play. So, Alex, it's good to see you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Alex and Sherry, thank you so much for the beverages and everything you brought in. I have to tell you, this committee is the most active committee in the state legislature, and I don't say that to blow my own horn. I say that to thank my members here. This committee is traveling around to 9 different cities across the state discussing election reforms and various other bills that come before this committee so that we can get an accurate feedback from what all of Oregon thinks and not just what Salem thinks and what paid lobbyists think. So it's an honor to be here. The committee is working very hard, and this is the first time
that we've had refreshments provided for us. So thank you very much. Appreciate it. Colleagues, with that, let's get into business. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2583. We'll open our public hearing. Cleus, when you get a chance, if you could read the bill summary.
Yeah, H.B. 2583 requires evidence of citizenship for individuals registering to vote for the first time in Oregon, declares an emergency to be effective on passage.
Thank you, Cletus. At this time, we'll call forward Bobby Childers.
Thank you, Representative Kitt, Chair, and staff, the committee members. I'm Bobby Childers, I'm a county clerk from Mayo County, and House Bill 2583 is, I understand the need for registration. To know that people are registered citizen of our state, but we have voter information templates. We have those things that are out there for folks. When they sign up to vote, it says, "Are you an American citizen?" You check yes or no, and by checking yes and saying yes, you swear that you are a qualified elector in the state. If people are required to give a piece of the Federal Citizen Act or naturalization papers, are they going to go into a political party when they're doing a registration drive? Are they going to go into my office? And then is that going to be open to anyone to look at? Or am I going to be questioned again whether I follow through? Don't we say a paragraph? I think you need to start carefully on how you follow through with it.
Bobby, thank you so much for being here today. I had a couple questions for you.
Okay.
You thought you were going to get off easy, didn't you? It's not a fair fight if both sides can't hit.
That's true.
All right. Well, the couple of things that come to mind is I realize that some of we've heard objections, pros and cons on this bill across the state. What would your opinion be requiring, instead of a birth certificate or a passport or naturalization papers, what if you required a driver's license, as is currently one of the options?
Yeah.
And I don't have my voter registration form in front of me. Can you grab that?
Is that mine?
Well, I just need one to read one section off there.
You want
this one or one? I can read either one.
Oh, you're awesome. Okay.
In fact, I had to use my Spanish on the way in here to help a farmer hurry up and stop and tell a farmer to get a little cap out and didn't speak in English. So I'm glad that I did. I was able to rasp that cap back in. So in a suit and tie, which I would have my picture taken there. It says here, this is identification. No, I'm sorry. It says a sufficient copy of one of the following showing your current name and address, and on there it lists a valid photo identification such as a driver's license as an example of a valid photo identification. It goes on to say a paycheck stub, a utility bill, a bank statement, a government document. And without beating that dead horse of exactly what a government document is, because I think it's very, 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 very vague. What would happen, and what would be your thoughts on if we said a driver's license and one of the four? So a driver's license and a copy of a utility bill, a check stub, a bank statement, or a government document to verify that the name and address were corresponding and were in fact the same. What would your thoughts be from an administrative standpoint on that?
I guess I need to clarify the piece that we're talking about is we've carried registered to vote by mail in mail only. Probably that was, yes, I think it's a good amendment. And when we learn that not everyone has a voter license, some people have the state piece of information. We will be having the central voter registration. So our social security numbers will work as the driver's licenses. So they may be able to create a piece in the DMV.
Sure.
But I don't want to rely on DMV either. And I don't want to have to ask you to give me identification at my county. If you come in and you scan your family, you're in it with me, I don't want to have to say to you, and I know I should believe it, but you have to prove to me that you're a U.S. citizen.
So noted. What would happen if you just simply had to prove who you were?
That works.
So when it says valid photo identification, you wouldn't necessarily restrict it to a driver's license or something issued by the DMV, an identification card by the DMV?
When you're filling in your own card, it would go to the place that you're physically filling in. If the kind of card is indeliverable, it's going to have to go where it says it's going to go. And when it comes back, it validates what you've told me. If you put Mickey Mouse in, probably not going to believe you. But, I wouldn't say that.
So, Kamani, my bigger concern, and I think the concerns of the authors of this particular bill, is to ensure that those that are registering to vote twofold are who they say they are and are legally able to vote in our great state. If, in fact, a birth certificate is a huge inconvenience, which...
Do you have yours?
I do have mine.
So you have a certified copy?
Absolutely. I had it on me? No. But if I were going to register to vote and that was my process, I knew that I had to take that. Would I take it down there? Absolutely.
Well,
my passport, I'd take the money.
Okay, but my only concern with that is we all work. Most folks work 8 to 5, Monday to Friday. Those are our hours. We're closed on this one. How are they going to be able to... They're not going to mail it to me. That's a $20 piece of equipment that they're going to have for me.
It doesn't state that it has to be an original. It could be a photocopy.
We will not accept a photocopy of something like that because of the manipulation that we have. We're creating another piece if we allow copies.
Good point.
Well, Jane, yes, I'd like to ask a couple questions. I'm intrigued by this document that shows signature and says, I swear or affirm that I'm qualified to be an elector, and I told the truth on this registration. And then, can you hear what it says in red under that?
In this one here, it says something.
Warning.
It says, come on, it's
all right, I can read it in English. It says, warning, if you sign this card and know it to be false, you can be fined up to $100,000 and are jailed for up to 5 years. Is this your impression that people notice that?
I would say it's too public fact. But it is a written statement. When you stand your ballot.
I'm correct with what?
You could have correct. Previous people don't look at it.
I'm assuming they would see it, not that they wouldn't. Now I make sure you...
I don't know. I look at things I find. But here's the deal. When I send you a ballot, it also has another statement that says, I am who I say I am. I am the person that this is meant to, and it has the same rules that you could be found. So, people that want to deceive are going to deceive, and I don't think they could be taken. The signature check, there's so many things in place.
One thing that's been brought to my attention is, what if we, instead of going through our county clerks to require proof of citizenship upon registering to vote, require proof of citizenship upon getting their driver's license, which is where most people, obviously not most people, but a large number of people register to vote. So if in fact at 16 I'm getting what we would call a provisional driver's license, at 18 you must renew that, and at that point in time provide a birth certificate, which is probably good for anyway.
To get a driver's license, you have to give your birth certificate.
Right. So upon registering to vote, they would check that box off. Or for those that are coming to our state for the first time, whether they're coming from California or anywhere else,
sure,
but they're coming to get a driver's license in Oregon for the first time, submit a document as a requirement. What were your thoughts on it? There's more DMVs than there are county clerks.
Right. We will have that DMV piece. The only question I have, and that would have to be a list of things in DMV because I do not know the answer, is when they do that, are they going to go ahead and have a piece in there that says I'm a legal alien, not a citizen? Because legal aliens drive.
Yeah.
And they have driver's license. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how to tell the difference. Legal alien or license is a form of citizen.
Right. And I think that's just upon the ability to register to vote, not obtain a driver's license. I think that...
So maybe that could be something... But I'm not opposed to having some piece of registration. I'm just thinking be very careful about what you ask us to maintain.
I've got one final question for myself, and then the committee, if they don't have any questions, we'll call the next testifier. In your entire time as county clerk, have you come across, and if you have, how many, any false people that did sign this document that shouldn't have signed this document?
And that have just registered to vote that have come into our office? We have had people send them in and they do not check that they are a citizen. So we send them a letter back, but they haven't checked it. They just leave it blank and mail it in. So that is up to us to, of course, catch that. And we send this letter out, ask them, are you indeed not a citizen? And say, thank you for your interest, but you do have to be a citizen. And we usually don't see
them
again. But
no, as far as coming in and falsifying,
no.
Right,
thank you. I had a comment, but I'll wait for
Representative
Green.
A comment also?
Okay.
Head or tails?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Comments first, please.
Well, I think this has actually been a very valuable piece of testimony from Ms. Childers, and I'll tell you why. She raised the point. We've had perhaps 5 or 6 hearings on this bill, and I thought that we had almost all the angles covered, but we're constantly finding new ones, I suppose. And the one that I heard this afternoon was the angle of voter registration drives and the political parties collecting, or whomever. It's not just the political parties, but whomever is conducting the voter registration drives, collecting personal information like the birth certificate copy or the passport copy or the citizenship, whatever the document is copied, and the sort of control functions of that information. Now, I would have every confidence walking into the Morrill County Clerk's office and handing them a photocopy of whatever my citizenship is, knowing that they would do an effective job of protecting that information. But I don't think we've explored the possibility of these voter registration drives. It's really interesting, particularly in this last presidential election. I know that in my legislative district alone, at least 5,000 new voters were registered in my district in the year leading up to the presidential election. And so it's who knows who registered or how they did it, but it's 5,000 opportunities to lose personal information. So maybe we can have some information in the future on that issue. But thank you so much for bringing that to my attention.
Thank you for allowing me to talk to you.
Thank you. Representative Greenwood.
Mr. Chair, I was intrigued with your suggestion, and I just wanted to comment on it. It's very clear to me that voting is a right, and we need to make sure that all citizens have as easy an opportunity to exercise that citizenship as possible. Driving is, of course, a privilege. I think we'd be in a problem if we're suggesting somebody has to have a driver's license in order to be a voter. And I think that would, or even the privilege of a voter, of a ID from DMV. It would seem to me that's a kind of backwards way to do it, to require a driver's license to be a voter. I'm sure that's not what you were suggesting. You're suggesting that that could be one of the possible pieces of...
I appreciate the inference that the chair is backwards at the moment. I'll keep that in mind. I look down the chairman's the prerogative to call on members for questions next time.
It's all right.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Bobby. Appreciate you taking the time to be here. At this time, we'll call the sheriff.
Better than him calling you.
Better than him calling me, which has been done before also.
Thank you for the late opportunity to speak. I had no idea that I was going to present any information here today.
Can you state your name?
Yes, Kenneth W. Matlack.
Thank you.
Newly elected Mark County Sheriff. In your comments that you made to Bobby Childers, I heard some comments that I had some practical experience upon when I was working with the state police. It's been probably like 15 years ago now. And I don't know if this issue has been totally resolved or not. What is happening, people from predominantly Mexico and other countries and Hispanic people came to this region in the early 70s for work. Places like Hermiston, Pendleton, the Dalles, Hood River, the Hispanic communities had blossomed, and there's lots of people that came for work primarily. I've learned in my work that many of the people that were coming here were purchasing false documents to become legitimized in that process of becoming apparent citizens, when in fact they were not. In Hermiston, in the early 80s, I started a process because they were complaining because of all the false documents. And what was being used primarily were green cards and social security cards that were being used for identification purposes. I heard you make a comment regarding if you go to DMV for this purpose to show that you are a citizen. I would have to say I have great concern that is a good idea, because the people at DMV have no training at that time, have no training in recognizing false documents to show that they were legitimate. As a matter of fact, because of that, we had IMS investigators that I began to work with that had provided training that I had that no one else in my department had at that time. So I just need a few people that could look at a green card or a social security card and determine why in fact it was false. They had been licensing thousands of people to get Oregon driver's license. Now, the significance of that, if you get the Oregon driver's license, you are now legitimate under most places for most reasons for anything, if you get that Oregon driver's license. The significance of the license, as you've indicated, is a great idea, because it's easily recognized, there's a process, there's people going through that. However, if you don't have people in the process of determining documentation that are true, I'm very concerned that is a trap that I'm going to fall into. I know that I trained, I don't know, dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of DMV personnel in various parts of the states in yearly seminars on how to recognize false documents. They put it into their manuals. I found later that it wasn't being followed entirely. And part of it was because of the work ethic that was falling between the cracks, or it wasn't updated. In my situation, I ended up getting a different promotion. I went to a different office, and people behind me, I didn't do a good job. I didn't train people below me to get to that level, and it just kind of died. And I've not thought about this for several years, to what status it is now. I know they have different green cards, which are now probably blue and white cards, but people refer to them as green cards. I know they still have green cards because I still see them. And I've not done any work in that area for a number of years. But that's my concern. The committee needs to be made aware that if you support this, there has to be something built into this that the people that are actually looking at these documents are trained to know that they're legitimate. Those certificates from Mexico, they are cheap. You can get them anywhere. They're very easy to do. People are not bilingual for the most part. They've tried to hire people that are bilingual. Even if you are fluent in Spanish and you look at a document, you're still not trained in foreign documents, for instance. So you can read it, but that doesn't do anything for you because is it legitimate? Is it a fake or whatever? So that's my only concern, that you have to be able to know what the documents are.
Yeah, I thank you for I think you raised some very, very valid points that have been touched on briefly in other committee meetings, but I think that you've elaborated on them in a way that really clarified.
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair? Even if I'm not a good
representative, you can always ask a question. Just don't say it.
I want you all to be calling out here how mean to me my chair is. Sheriff, did you find generally that American citizens were using false documents to prove they were U.S. citizens?
Say it one more time.
My question is, did you find when you were dealing with these false documents that it was the good guys using false documents to prove they were good guys, or was it the bad guys using false documents to prove they were good guys?
I've seen both. For the most part, they were good people that were trying to get work. I can't get to work if I don't drive. So they were using it to get their driver's license to be good people.
I'm sorry I used good guys and bad guys. The question was, do you think U.S. citizens are buying false documents to prove they're U.S. citizens? Or do you think it would be the non-citizens that would be buying
I have never seen a U.S. citizen to use false documents to prove who they are for some reason. It's always to prove who they're not. But it's all illegal people.
If I can follow that.
Yeah, I think
I remember those days coming through.
I think the judge is probably
like, may I follow up on that?
Hey, where are you going with this?
Here's where I'm going with it. I mean, it seems to me that the problem is false documents. The problem will not help American citizens get able to register to vote. If somebody wants to vote bad enough that they're going to get a false document, we'll register them under this law. They'll have the documents. But if a U.S. citizen happens not to have a birth certificate, they're not likely to run with a forged birth certificate so they can prove they can vote.
I follow you now, and I don't think that would be a problem, but I have great concern that the other element in our society that's growing would be a problem because of the false documentation of who they are and so forth.
But if we hire a document, now I'll use the bad guys because if somebody's trying to do something bad, they'll have a false document. This law won't stop them, but it will stop good guys. The American citizens trying to exercise the right to vote who happen not to have a birth certificate or a passport or something.
You would find if this was easy to do, as Bobby Childers expressed, if you make it real easy to do what you want to for the public to do, you will find people who are not interested in voting at all. But if you get the process of becoming a registered voter easy, it's just one more avenue that somebody who is illegal trying to get benefits can now have more being legitimate by an easy process to get registered to vote. I don't care about voting here, I just want to vote, I want to do this, I want benefits or whatever they're trying to get. And I see that as another potential possibility to make it real easy. Unintended consequence, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just occurs to me that there is a bill pending before the House Transportation Committee on a requirement to prove your legal status. I think it says proof citizenship, but I would imagine that probably
the extent of legal status, you know, permanent resident status as well. And I just think there's a lot, Sheriff, that you could offer to that discussion, because, you know, I'm not aware of, I don't sit on the Transportation Committee, so I don't know if we've had the discussion about the training of the DMV to be able to prove the validity of those documents. But it seems to me that I'd like to connect you with the chair of that committee, George Grimman, because I think that that's a valuable addition to that discussion. So maybe we can follow up on that. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate you.
Colleagues, that appears to be all we have to testify on House Bill 2583. If there are no other people wishing to testify on House Bill 2583, we'll close the public hearing at this time. This time, colleagues, we'll open. Citizen to use false documents to prove who they are for some reason. It's always to prove who they're not, but and it's all illegal people.
If I can follow that. I think I remember those days for me too.
I think the judge has probably heard a few of those cases.
May I follow up on that?
I don't know where you're going with this.
Well, let me. Here's where I'm going with it. I mean, it seems to me that the problem is false documents. The problem will not help American citizens get able to register to vote. If somebody wants to vote bad enough that they're going to get a false document, we'll register them under this law. They'll have the documents. But if a U.S. citizen happens not to have a birth certificate, they're not likely to go and get a forged birth certificate so they can prove they can vote.
I follow you now, and I don't think that would be a problem, but I have great concern that the other element in our society that's growing would be a problem because of the false documentation on who they are and so forth.
But if we require a document, now I'll use the bad guys because if somebody's trying to do something bad, they'll have a false document. This law won't stop them, but it will stop the good guys. The American citizens trying to exercise their right to vote who have not to have a birth certificate or a passport or something.
You would find if this was easy to do, as Bobby Childers expressed, if you make it real easy to do what you want to for the public to do, you will find people who are not interested in voting at all. But if you get the process of becoming a registered voter easy, it's just one more avenue that somebody who is illegal trying to get benefits can now have more being legitimate by an easy process to get registered to vote. I don't care about voting here. I just want to work, or I want to do this, I want benefits or whatever they're trying to get. And I see that as another potential possibility if you make it real easy. An unintended consequence, perhaps.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Sheriff. Representative Delta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It just occurs to me that there's a bill pending before the House Transportation Committee on a requirement to prove your legal status. I think it says prove citizenship, but I would imagine that that probably would extend to legal status, you know, permanent resident status as well. And I just think there's a lot, Sheriff, that you could offer to that discussion, because, you know, I'm not aware of, I don't sit on the Transportation Committee, so I don't know if they've had the discussion about the training of the DMV to be able to prove the validity of those documents. But it seems to me that I'd love to connect you with the chair of that committee, George Grimman, because I think that that's a valuable addition to that discussion. So maybe we can follow up on that. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate you being here today. Colleagues, that appears to be all we have to testify on House Bill 2583. If there are no other people wishing to testify on House Bill 2583, we'll close the public hearing at this time. This time, colleagues, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2551. Please, if you could read the summary of House Bill 2551.
Mr. Chair, committee members, HB 2551. Prohibits opening of return identification and secrecy envelopes in elections conducted by mail until 8:30 a.m. prohibits ballot drop sites established by persons other than elections officials.
Thank you, Cletus. At this time, we will hear from Bobby Childers.
Representative Kitt's chair, and I'm sorry for sliding our own local chair, Representative Smith, and committee members, thank you for hearing me.
Bobby, state your name one more time for the record for this bill, please.
Bobby Childers, Morrow County Clerk.
Thank you.
Okay, do you want me to go ahead and give you my...
Please testify on House Bill 2551 to whichever capacity you so choose.
Okay, I am in opposition to House Bill 2551. I believe, as does our association, it says, I read this here, it says revenue, no revenue impact. To who? I only have 5,100 registered voters. I have 7,400 and some folks that could be registered. So I have a fairly high registration, I feel, for people that could vote. If I have to vote, open the ballot, man those things with election folks every day until we do this, and 8:30 and give you results at 8 o'clock that night, my revenues are going to go up. Because one, I don't have the area to do this. There's no way where I work. I'd love you to come see where I work. I'm in a beautiful, historic, 100-year-old building. It's beautiful. But it's not workable. So we have ballots that are folded because in Oregon we're vote by mail. They need to be opened and flattened a bit so that they run through our feeders better. They have to be checked for all those things. I'll just give you the quickest example I've got. We have the mayor election coming. I have 29 different types of ballots. Now, I'm a small county. Marion County probably has 200 different kinds of ballots. Those have headers that go through those machines. They're going to have to be separated out, plus checked. So how are you going to get that done by 8 o'clock that night with the same amount of folks in a crunched time? I believe you're just asking for problems like Florida.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking at Representative Smith's son and how they look like they are twins.
He has more hair.
Mom.
Bobby, this bill, the ability to do on your behalf what this bill would require of county clerk,
mm-hmm.
I understand the genesis of the bill and the reason for the bill.
Okay.
It's often been compared to
purgatory.
PGE.
Okay.
For
mm-hmm.
example.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one in our county. Uh-huh.
Getting all of their bills at one time, or sending out all of their bills, or processing all of their bills. Mm-hmm. They seem to be able to do it in a very timely fashion. What would be the difference? Is it because you guys are you not given the same equipment? Would it take an upgraded equipment for you to be able to process these ballots in a timely fashion with these time constraints? What could we do to help? What would it take for us as the legislature to do for you, the county clerks, to process the ballots in a time frame that are outlined in the bill?
I just don't see how that could happen.
Just no. Physically impossible.
Well, Washington County in the November election had 268,000 registered voters, which 223,218 voted. How are they going to get that done and done professionally and correctly and get those folks trained and retained for the next election, because this is going to be every time, and housed? And you're going to believe that it's correct. How's that going to happen by 8 o'clock? I don't know how you're going to make this work.
And that, hence my question, is if we pass
this... What should we do? What do they do with the folks that choose not to send in their bill?
Send them to collections.
And are you going to be our collections? You're going to send me collections?
That's not what... I think you're...
Well, I mean...
Just listen to my question.
Mm-hmm.
The bill would require the county clerks to do something.
Right.
My question to you is, what would we have to do or provide? Would it be an extra 10 people at the county clerk's office? Would it be extra envelope openers? What?
It would be all those things. It would be extra space. It would be extra bodies. It would be extra money.
So from my perspective, my question to you then, for, let's just use Morrill County as an example.
Sure.
What would it take for you at your county and your estimate to make this happen? I mean, what would be the cost to the state is what I'm driving at.
It wouldn't cost the state. It would cost my taxpayers. So,
but they're
okay, 358 hours of six folks working from 2 days before the election to 2 days after the election is where I'm at. And I only have the 5,012 that were actually okay to do that day. So I don't know. I just can't envision how it could happen. I look at, Multnomah had 359,453 folks vote. From 8:30 in the morning, we're going to open them up. We're going to make sure that they're all ready to go and they look correct. And because you have to make sure everything's good on those, to make sure the speeders are going to read. With the wages the way they are,
you think the bill is impossible to implement? Because we could pass it.
You could pass it.
And then you would have to do it.
We'd have to do it.
But you're saying it'd be impossible to do
it. I'm going
to
say that. When you want that information at 8 o'clock, I'm going to tell you not going to happen. So.
Is that a fair
trade-off? County tells me that at 8 o'clock, so he wouldn't be the first.
Thank you, Representative.
Yeah.
Would it be fair to the voter, from your perspective in your job, if we bump back the 8 o'clock requirement, the 8 p.m. requirement, to extend that later so that the ballots could be counted later? What are your thoughts on that?
We're there till 3 in the morning already. So you're not changing how we do business.
Representative Holby?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm not trying to rattle your cage here.
Oh, you got it rattled.
I'm just trying to understand why this is a bad idea.
Well, we do have this, though. You guys already, we were at a 4 day. You bumped it back to 7.
Right.
So, my county, I am not as concerned at my county.
Sure.
I'm quite a bit smaller. I'm the 8th on the bottom. But the ones that are number 1 on the top we all have to go by the same rules.
Right.
And I could probably implement them easier. I could have one folks just open them and don't touch anything else. But, we're worried about integrity.
Absolutely.
And I know, but because we open them, you're worried that we're changing, we're looking, we're doing that. That is not ever going to happen. I understand the worry, but we have our Oregon voters mail manual, and it completely covers how they're going to be handled. Anyone could look at this and know. We had people in our office from the parties during the last election. They were amazed. I was amazed they were there. But it was wonderful. It was a good thing for all of us. They learned a lot of things, and I think if most people got to do that, they would understand what there is integrity still in elections.
Colleagues, I think it's fair to say that Bobby not just objects, but strenuously objects to this bill.
That's in the polling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I'm going to briefly introduce myself, I'm Representative Paul Holby. I'm from District 8, which is part of Eugene and the rural part of South Central Lane County. And having said that, I would like to ask Bobby if I kind of heard her say something there, and I just want to clarify that. That you're going along with all the other county clerks that we've heard testify on this bill in agreeing, and I also agree, that this bill is ludicrous, I think you said, maybe idiotic and a waste of money.
I tried not to put the idiotic in there, but yes, I do. I think that it could get passed, but then I think it would be an unfunded mandate, because in the ORS it just says they will pay for my elections, but should they have to pay this much?
Mm-hmm. Great. I appreciate that. Representative Smith.
The person who I was going to ask is walking out. Can someone share with me, who is Ruth Bendel and Mike Bold?
Balanese.
Balanese, because I see that House Bill 2551 was introduced at their request.
That's been one of the joys of being on this committee, getting to meet them.
Mike Balanese is a constituent of mine. And Ruth...
He wasn't the one in the fist fight, though, right?
No. Ruth Bendel is, I think, a constituent of Representative Barker, from once from Beaverton, once from Hillsborough. They have testified on the bill when we were in Salem, and they will be testifying on the bill at our final hearing on this bill in Salem.
Quick follow-up.
Please.
I'm assuming they requested this because there was an incident that they felt needed to be addressed. Could someone share with me what that incident would have been?
We're still trying to figure that one out, I think.
They cited a few things, some of the concerns, and I think Bobby has touched on them, when we had people,
observing.
The observers that were in there observing the process, if you will.
I don't remember now.
They felt that they were not able to observe or contribute to the process to the degree in which they should have been able to,
right,
to do that.
They wanted to touch and feel.
Got it. Thank you.
I hope that I'm characterizing their concerns to the best of I am to the best of my ability, and whether it's accurate or not, I'm confident that it is.
I would like to just add to that. I had the same question, of why are you doing this? And my question to the parties are, okay, if it's good for one to be able to do this, would you like the other ones to do the same to your folks' ballot? And they didn't like that. So.
Is there an agreement? Final question or comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask first, but I'd also comment. The interesting thing that happened in the last election cycle in the Portland area was one of the major talk show hosts started raising on the show the concern that the ballots that were delivered early could be tampered with and created a movement which changed the late voting pattern in Portland of getting many of his listeners to drop off their ballot at the last minute to protect it from the potential fraud or change that could come in, and it meant that the late ballots this time were very different than late ballots in other elections. But I'd really like to ask you, has anybody ever alleged have they alleged any fraud in your county in things that happened to ballots from the time they first came in 14 days early or something? Has there ever been any allegations here at all about that?
I will share with you, we did have a man receive someone else's ballot, wrong post office box. He signed it, he voted it, with his own name.
Right.
But it had the other folks' name on it, so we called him and he said, no, he'd never registered to vote, but he thought it was a good idea. So we got him talked to, and he was very receptive to it.
Can I follow on that?
Please.
Do you and your county have other drop sites
yes,
for ballots?
I do.
Can you tell us how you manage those drop sites and whether the pieces of, I think it's this legislation has
something. Do I have to? Okay. Okay, they are not as called manned. They are watched. We have one in my office. We have one in each city. This is more for the folks that live in those, so there is a drop box. One is at a city hall. Well, actually, one is in Ion City Hall. One is Boardman City Hall. They're locked up at night. One is at the Irgun Annex, which is a county building. And one is at our public works office in Lexington, Oregon. So at night, each one of those are put away. As far as during the day, they're locked, but they aren't stable. The boxes can be packed off. They never have been. They're in their offices.
Somebody could steal a box, is what you're saying, conceivably.
They could, yes. Would they walk out of the door with a big blue box that's this big? Probably not. But I would like to get the kind that people can drive up to, and that is for ADA purposes. But then I'm scared of this manned piece.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith, you'll ask the last question.
Thank you, Chair Pitts. I just want to make a comment talking about the thoroughness of our county clerk. I have a personal story in which, it's probably about 24 months ago, I went to sign my ballot, and I have two signatures. I have kind of an official signature and then the quick one. Well, I used the quick one, and I received a phone call saying, "Your signature doesn't match. Can you come and make sure that you find this?" And I said, "Yep, I'll be down." So they do a very thorough, very complete job.
That's.
Is he the one that stole the ballot?
No.
Thank you, Bobby, for testifying today.
I appreciate you coming to our area, and I welcome you back anytime.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Colleagues, at this time, we'll be closing the public hearing on House Bill 2551. Colleagues, at this time, I would offer, since no one has signed up to testify on behalf of HJR 1, which would require an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to require the legislature to go to annual sessions and not biannual sessions, that we simply transfer HJR 1 to our committee meeting in Pendleton tomorrow. Is there any objections?
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I'm not sure if the public that's visiting with us today knows any of the history of that bill, and I think this might be a good opportunity to just sort of lay the issue out just so that they know what we're talking about, and not necessarily to work the bill or to testify, but just to set forth what the issue is.
Okay. I think that's fine. Cletus, would you go ahead and read the bill summary? I'll open a public hearing briefly since we're going to be discussing the bill.
Mr. Chair and Committee, HJR 1 amends the Oregon Constitution and requires annual sessions. Odd years not to exceed 120 calendar days, even years not to exceed 60 calendar days. Would you like me to give more information, Mr. Chair?
I think Representative Dalton would like a little more information.
Oregon has a biannual session with the Assembly convening on the second Monday of every odd year. Oregon has no set ending date for regular sessions. An average regular session runs about 6 months. Oregon Constitution does not specify a limitation on session length. However, most sessions last approximately 6 months. During the interim, the legislators serve on interim committees and task forces to study issues likely to be faced during the next legislative session. Similar measures were introduced by the Senate in 1970 and 71 legislative assemblies. SJR 15 and SJR 12, respectively, were in the proposed not to exceed 128 calendar days in odd years and 50 calendar days in even years. Some of the issues considered are budget impact, efficiency of government, combination of brief and standard sessions, ability to revisit biannual budgets, and equity funding of the legislature during the continuum.
Thank you, Cletus. For those that are in attendance here, the legislature is considering going to an annual session, as you heard,
there. Some of the concerns that have been raised are the ability to write a two-year budget with how quickly our state is growing, and is it the responsible thing to do is try to budget for 2 years in advance. I think you're seeing a lot of pressures on our local school districts to try to budget 2 years out. So is it more of a responsible thing to go to an annual budget and write it for 12 months instead of 24 months? These are all issues that we are discussing right now, but obviously for the public good, you know, would it be for the public good? Would it be a convenience? Would it be an inconvenience? Are you going to get qualified people to serve in the legislature? Is it going to be a barrier to prohibit those that can't live on $1,286 a month just to do such a thing? So, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Kitt. Facetiously, I say if you want real opinion on this, go ask the spouses of legislators if they would like to have us go down there. I have a couple thoughts on House Joint Resolution 1, and I bring my work experience with the Ways and Means Committee to this concept. One of the struggles we have is trying to balance a budget 24 months out. And quite often, it's very difficult for us to predict what the economic cycle is going to be. Take September 11th, for example. I don't think any of us in the legislature saw that coming, nor did we anticipate the economic effect that would have on the state of Oregon. And yet, the state's budget was dramatically affected by that. One of the things that House Joint Resolution 1 would allow is for the legislature to handle its budget just like a business would, and that is take a look at it every 12 months and determine what its funding needs are going to be. States such as Washington and Montana have annual sessions where they go down there for a short period of time on the even number year simply to balance the budget, to take care of any revenue issues, take care of any emergency issues, and then they adjourn. It's a very short session, and then they have their regular session. And so if it was structured in such a way to where it allowed for the state to thoughtfully budget, I think it would make sense. If it was structured in such a way as to where it allowed just another legislative session, I would be very reticent to go there.
Thank you, Representative Greenlight.
You know, I've been speculating on this too, and it would be interesting to see what the wise think, whether being away for 6 months, is easier or harder on a family, because I really do worry about people like you with young families and the need to earn a living, and to see, it seems to me, you being away from this area for 6 months, it must be very, very trying. But the thing I was wondering about, and I am intrigued with this idea, is whether the committees would stay as the regular committees in session between, I mean, that could be very useful if you could have not this crazy interim committee model, which does some stuff but not a lot, but if you could have your regular committees meeting between the 4 month session and the 2 month session, you could really get a lot of work done. And certainly at least Ways and Means and revenue, but maybe even the substantive committees, it would seem to me that could make a very efficient form if you could meet maybe once a month during that period as a regular committee. I don't know if you would infer that from this or not. It's not spoken to in the constitutional amendment, but there could be some interesting twists to this that might make it really.
I would say that, you know, and for those of us that don't have a family, obviously, not that it's not a consideration, it's not an immediate concern, because there's no way you can sympathize, not empathize, in the situation, and I do very much so, especially with someone like Representative Smith, who drives 4 hours here to be at this committee and is going to turn around and drive 4 hours back to go to Salem for an 8 o'clock meeting tomorrow morning. That's true public service, and it's a huge thing to ask of anybody. I don't care what party you are or where you're from in this state. It's a huge commitment to ask. I would personally support the idea of annual sessions because I think the people of Oregon deserve it. I think it's the responsible thing to do. I think it's entirely irresponsible to send us down there for an undefined amount of time that can go infinitely long. I mean, we went through September.
Almost 8 months. August 28th.
9 months.
Yeah.
Last time. that's irresponsible. That's not the responsible thing to do for the people of Oregon. So it's for that reason that we will be tweaking this bill, and we will be moving it out for proposal at a later date, because I think there's some merit to it. If you had a defined amount of time, you're going to be gone for 3 months, you're going to be gone for 4 months. You can plan your professional life around it, you can plan your personal life around it, and I think that more people would be engaged in the process of saying, hey, you know what, I don't mind doing that. I think I might like to serve in the legislature. And truly engage people into a citizen's legislature, which is not what you have now. You have a house of very, you have three different types of people. You have those that are retired, those that are rich, or those that have a spouse that will support their political habit.
Or all three.
Or all three.
I don't have any of those.
and then there are the three of us. Do everything we can do to serve, and because we love the
I've
process.
I've got a fish. That's about it.
I'm with you. So, Representative Dalto, have we hashed this out enough for you? I think so,
Mr. Chair, and I very much appreciate your consideration. It was a good opportunity, I think, to at least have us have some comments, just so we each know what we're thinking.
And I would encourage those of you that are out here that didn't want to testify specifically on this bill, if you have any thoughts on this idea, this concept, if you have tweaks, you know, that, hey, think about this, email Representative Smith. He is your representative. You can email me if you want. I'll read it. That's fine. But we need the feedback. That's why we're coming out here to you saying, we're down there. We're not in the real world. We're in the fishbowl known as the Capitol. And we're trying to get out here to talk to real Oregonians to find out what they think. So with that, I will close the public hearing on HJR 1. At this time, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2774. At this time, we'll call forward, please, Lisa Baum. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Clerk, if you could, excuse me, not clerk, administrator. Sorry, Annetta.
She's assistant.
Very territorial about it. So please plead us.
Mr. Chair, committee, HB 2774 extends time for elector and irrigation districts to obtain a replacement ballot. If passed, this measure would allow an irrigation district to provide replacement ballots in a similar manner as county election offices now provide for issuing replacement ballots to the other electors.
For 4 months, you can plan your professional life around it, you can plan your personal life around it, and I think that more people would be engaged in the process of saying, hey, you know what, I don't mind doing that. I think I might like to serve in the legislature. And truly engage people into a citizen's legislature, which is not what you have now. You have a house of very, you have three different types of people. You have those that are retired, those that are rich, or those that have a spouse that will support their political habit.
Or all three.
I don't have any of those.
And then there are the two. Do everything we can do to serve, and because we love the process. I'm with you. So, Representative Dalton, have we hashed this out enough for you?
I think so, Mr. Chair, and I very much appreciate your consideration. It was a good opportunity, I think, to at least have us have some comments, just so we each know what we're thinking.
And I would encourage those of you that are out here that didn't want to testify specifically on this bill, if you have any thoughts on this idea, this concept, if you had tweaks, you know, that, hey, think about this, email Representative Smith, and he is your representative. You can email me if you want, I'll read it, that's fine. But we need the feedback. That's why we're coming out here to you saying, we're down there, we're not in the real world, we're in the fishbowl known as the Capitol, and we're trying to get out here and talk to real Oregonians to find out what they think. So with that, I will close the public hearing on HJR 1. At this time, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2774.
This time we'll call forward, please, Lisa Baum. I hope I'm saying that correctly. Clerk, if you could, excuse me, not clerk, administrator, sorry, Annetta. It's something very territorial about. So please, please.
Mr. Chair, committee, HB 2774 extends time for electoral and irrigation districts to obtain a replacement ballot. If passed, this measure will allow an irrigation district to provide replacement ballots in a similar manner as county election offices now provide for issuing replacement ballots to their electors. The two districts, irrigation districts have a different, 5-day difference for replacement ballots.
Thank you, Cletus. Lisa, welcome. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Chairman Kitt, members of the committee, I'm Lisa Baum. I work for West Extension Irrigation District, and our office is in Eragon, Oregon, and I'm here representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress. And I believe that you've already received our written testimony on this from Christina McNitt. I'm just here to confirm to you that currently there's a tiny loophole, if you want to call it, that allows some voters to not get their vote counted if they have lost their ballot, spilled coffee on their ballot, and we're just trying to ensure that everybody's vote is counted. So if you have any questions.
In college also, you have written testimony here from Christina McNitt, who represents the Oregon Water Resources Congress in Salem, and that has asked that she had a little conflict with family, and I told her that it wasn't necessary that she be here today. So that's, I excuse her from being here today. So please read that also for written testimony for this bill. Representative Bellville.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'd like to get some more information about these irrigation district elections. Is this a process that is separate from the county elections, and do you administer it differently, and who gets to vote? How is that determined?
Irrigation districts are considered a special district in Oregon, and we're organized under ORS 545. And all of our election statutes are within ORS 545. There are special considerations that I think the county clerks are happy not to administer our elections. Unlike like a school district, everybody within the boundaries gets to vote on items for that school district because everyone really has an interest in it. And in an irrigation district, really the only people that have an interest in it are those people that have water rights. Everything that we do in the irrigation district is driven by the water rights that exist on a piece of property. So even though our boundaries may be, for example, this table, these people have water rights, and these people have water rights, and these people have water rights. But there are people that live within the boundaries who don't have water rights. So currently, they do not get to vote. And because of that selective balloting, we administer our own elections through our own records, and the county clerks do not administer them.
How do you pay for that process?
It is a part of our annual budget. We budget for elections annually.
Through the irrigation district?
We have annual, depending on how you bill it, under which statute, you can either have an assessment or you can have an incurred charge. There's two different ways that you can bill. And so in that annual billing that we have to our landowners, that's part of our budget.
A final question, Mr. Chair. Final follow-up.
What sort of issues are considered at the election of an irrigation district?
99% of the elections cover who is going to be on the board of directors. Irrigation districts have boards that are either 3-member boards or 5-member boards. And in our district, we have a 5-member board with 3-year alternating terms. The other things that could come up at an election, if there was a recall election that the landowners wanted to recall one of the board directors, districts that have a 3-member board in order to go to a 5-member board, that has to be voted on by the landowners. There are a few other things, but primarily it's just who governs the district. We're governed by our board of directors.
Mr. Chair, maybe I could ask just one more question.
The final follow-up.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just also wanted to know what the size of your irrigation district is, what the boundaries are, what the area that we're talking about.
Irrigated acres, we have roughly 10,000 acres and roughly 960 landowners.
What is the name of your irrigation district here, and which counties does it cover?
Our irrigation district is West Extension Irrigation District. We are a Bureau of Reclamation project, and we're in two counties, Umatilla County and Morrow County. We're long and skinny.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I'm trying to expand my knowledge of rural Oregon.
Do you have a question?
You say you have 10,000 acres and roughly 1,000.
We have landowners that own a tenth of an acre of land, and we have landowners that own 600 acres of land.
It's the actually acres of the water rights, not the acres of land.
Acres of water rights.
Okay,
yeah.
I understand.
I think this is a great example of a bill that quite frankly, unless you get out here and talk to the communities that are affected by these sorts of things, you never understand coming from the metro area. We don't deal with cougar, we don't deal with bears, water rights or not, a contentious issue.
I have cougars and bears in my district.
Right.
What high school?
These sorts of things are good, so thank you so much for being here to testify. Representative Blake Smith.
Thank you, Chair Kiff. I would share with the committee, if you ever want to see real politics in a real political battle, get into a water fights issue in terms of who owns water.
I actually have that experience.
Yeah, there's a saying around here that whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting, and there's a lot of truth to that.
I'm a
water committee, I hear that every day. Representative Jensen.
Colleagues, we will be moving House Bill 2774 tomorrow. In Pendleton, we'll take it to a work session in Pendleton as it is Representative Jensen's bill, and we'll be in Representative Jensen's district. So, if anybody has any feedback on that bill, please feel free to email us as well. So, with that,
you're too late.
You can be amended in the Senate. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2774, so there are no other people wishing to testify. Thank you. Colleagues, we've made it through the majority of our agenda. We're now at the juncture of introducing introducing measures for the committee to contemplate as to whether or not they will be introduced as committee bills. So with that, the chair will entertain a motion.
And Mr. Chair, we have legislative council draft number 3487 before us, allowing motorsports racetracks in exclusive funding zones under certain conditions, and I would move LC 3487 be introduced as a committee bill.
Representative Dalton moves LC 3487 be introduced as a committee bill. Are there any objections? Seeing none.
No comments.
I'm more than happy to hear comments.
Oh, no. I would only say that some bills you have to take 4 hours in the Capitol before you introduce them. Is that right?
A little background on this bill, since Representative Greenlick has so kindly opened Pandora's box on me. This is my bill. What this bill would allow, in the summary of the bill, is there was a landowner in Clackamas County that has had an existing racetrack there by the name of Pat's Acres since 1969 in continuous use. My father raced go-karts on this track, as I do now. The problem is the conditional use permit that's been issued would only allow 4 go-karts to be raced on this track, nothing else. makes it difficult for people to make a living running racetracks if that is the case. So this bill would simply allow that person that owns that racetrack to allow other motorized vehicles that are conducive to that particular track to do so. And yes, it requires an act of the legislature. So that's your land use system.
It's likely you'll have my strong support on this.
And I do appreciate that, Representative Bruno. I would also note for those of you that are so close to Boardman here, the relating to clause on this is relating to motor racing tracks. Very amendable to include NASCAR tracks when they come to Oregon. And we are currently fighting with the state of Washington right now to bring NASCAR to Oregon. I've had dinner with the executive president of Talladega Motorsports, and they are looking at sites right now. They would also have to have an exemption because the only place that you could put a facility of that size would be on EFU land, so it would require an exception at this point in time. So there are exception lands and other things, but the locations that are conducive right now that they are looking at are on EFU land. So,
Mr. Chair, I'm not going to object to this bill, but I will make you aware that there's a racetrack in my district on exclusively farm use land. And
it's a kind of crib, I believe.
No, this one is not. This one's in my district, actually, around Bonita. And the neighbors of this farm piece of land that there is a racetrack on are extremely upset about the noise on Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday mornings, Sunday nights, and, you know, I may be in a position where I may have to live against it.
I would take great caution on that, since you brought it up, I think it's a great point, and it is a concern. This particular track is surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of acres and nothing. There are no dwellings.
One statewide, I don't think we'll make that kind of a statement.
And the few dwellings that are there, the people do not have an objection when they put that in writing. So,
I would just share for the edification of the committee that the racetrack under consideration up in Boardman would be, I believe, on industrial rezoned property at the second largest port in the state of Oregon and the second largest port, upland river port in the United States, with container movement of 25,000 a year-ish, right in there, Commissioner Lindsay. Anyway, the Port of Moore is very well suited to attract a large NASCAR track should the County Commission and the Port Commission and the citizens of Moore County be ready and prepared to do so.
For further clarification, the site that the NASCAR folks have looked at and like better than Boardman and Troutdale, which is also on industrial, the old Reynolds aluminum plant, would be the site in Woodburn that is on EFU land. So, that being said, seeing no objection, Representative Delco.
I object to the chair failing to mention that I too have raised the cards at this particular district, although I did not prevail against the chair.
Therefore, he did not race, he participated. Seeing no objections, introducing LC 3487 and acknowledging the concerns of Representative Polvey, we're introducing this committee bill.
Thank you, Commissioner. And I'll suggest that you better say something nicer to me. This vice chair of land use, I may see this.
And thank you, colleagues, and thank you all for being here. This is it's a fun committee. We have fun with each other. We have fun doing what we do, but we also take our job very seriously and appreciate greatly your hospitality here. And again, I want to say a special thanks to the chairman, Representative Smith, for immersing himself in this committee and taking on the chairmanship of the campaign finance guidelines that you're going to be seeing coming out of the House of Representatives. As you all know, we've had some issues down in Salem. We're addressing those issues. Representative Smith has grabbed that bull by the horn and Horns, and is doing a wonderful, wonderful job. So thank you, Representative Smith, for all your work, and thank you so much for having us and convincing me. Representative Smith was the one that said to me, when your committee goes on the road, would you consider coming to Aetna? I said, I haven't. I said, but we will, and we talked further, and we're here. So thank you, Representative Smith, for your suggestion.
Do you have a question?
Mr. Chair, pretty early today in our agenda, and since we're out here in Hefner and haven't been here before, maybe we'd like to invite the members of the audience to come forward on any issue they've been reading about in newspapers. If there's an issue pending before the legislature, give them the opportunity, since we're pretty far from the Capitol. And I don't know that there is anybody out there that has something in mind, but I'd like to take this opportunity since we're here.
Are there any objections to the committee?
No.
And friends, and that's politics. If there's a certain amount of time to talk, fill it. So if there are any issues that anybody would like to address at this time, I'm more than happy to have an informational, we'll call it an informational rural Oregon forum, if you'd like. If anybody has any comments or questions about anything going on in Salem, please come to the mic.
Can I testify?
No.
This is for the participants only.
Mr. Chair, I'm John Turner. I'm the president of Blue Mountain Community College, and I'd like to thank the committee for listening to me for just a moment. I'd also like to acknowledge the strong support that we've received from Representative Smith in our district. We represent the six counties of Oregon in the northeast corner, some 18,000 square miles. And there's not a lot of educational opportunity out here, post-secondary educational opportunity. I've noted on Monday the draft budgets that came out of both the Senate and the House. And the budgets, to be quite honest, were somewhat lower than what we were hoping to see in the community college budget, specifically the budget for the Office of the Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And I would like the representatives to at least consider, as we move closer to the May economic forecast, that if there's an opportunity to add another $20 million to the state community college budget, that will solve many of our problems. We've seen the budget for community colleges go in the 01 to 03 bond year from $462 million to the current bond year budget of $410. And when you take away the money in the community college and workforce development commissioner's budget, the House budget the other day was somewhere in the ballpark of $420 million. With our increased costs in PERS, utilities, health care, salaries, we can't make payroll with that budget. We're going to have to consider further cuts in educational opportunities for the citizens of Northeast Oregon. So I would ask you to consider that as you make many hard choices in the next month and a half. And please consider that the community colleges in the state of Oregon have asked for a budget of $440 million. Thank you.
Thank you. I know that the Ways and Means Committee is working diligently trying to fund everything that we can fund to the level that we can fund it, falling under the cap of the $12.393 billion that both sides have agreed to. So thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dalto, what a surprise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, no surprise. I appreciate the recognition. And I appreciate your comments very much. This is exactly what I was interested in hearing. I want to tell you a couple things. One, I want to say that the community colleges leadership as a whole around the state, are there 17 community
That's
colleges?
Correct.
The community colleges are doing an excellent job, first of all, in providing education and vocational services and training and community development services to each of the 17 different areas, but also you're doing a great job down at the Capitol as a real presence from your association to educate us about how important a role we play in our state, in our communities. And what I like to tell people is that we can't talk about economic development. We can't talk about moving Oregon into the future without talking about strong and vital community colleges and public universities, because what we're really talking about is developing our workforce, a talented workforce. And I don't need to tell you this, but a talented workforce is what attracts employers, world-class employers, to Oregon. It's what helps our employers grow and prosper. And so thank you for the role you're playing. We read your message on the $440 million. I'd like to point out that your House leadership, the House leadership and the House co-chair has a very strong commitment to community colleges. In fact, with leadership of the co-chair and the Ways and Means team, restored more than $20 million to the community college budget that was cut in the governor's recommended budget. And the governor's recommended budget was unbelievably inadequate for community colleges, to put it mildly. And through the partnership with your leadership and our leadership, we've heard that message, and we're doing everything we can to try to reverse those cuts. And I will, you know, just again reiterate that the House leadership did make those restorals, and that we will continue to look at that area as we have the new revenue forecast and see what that brings for us, if that allows us to have even more resources to plug in that hole and let you do what you need to do. So thanks for bringing it to our attention.
Thank you, Representative Dalton.
I would also suggest that the community college budget that was brought forward, this most recent upswing, would not have been that without the hard work of Representative Smith, and I can say that firsthand. So, that being said,
Mr.
Chairman.
Thank you. I'm very much interested in the community colleges, and the Rock Creek campus support of community colleges in my district. I was intrigued that your association, your presidents, managed to work together to create capital priority, which ended up, I think, with only two of the 17, or maybe four of the 17, I guess.
There are six projects right now that I believe are funded in the current budget.
I was going to ask how your institution is relative to capital needs. And
We have some capital needs, Representative Greenwood. However, we are not pressing hard for funding this time. There are community colleges in the state of Oregon that operate out of old hospitals, out of crumbling commercial buildings that do not have a campus. Blue Mountain Community College was fortunate to be built as a community college some 43 years ago. Our buildings, we are doing our best to keep them up, and we have a nice campus. The 17 community college presidents banded together in the interests of those community colleges that have a tremendous need for a campus, and that's what this capital construction money is going to go towards. So while I won't see a dollar of it, I still support it.
I think that was a terrific move, and it really made it a lot easier for us to be there to support the package when you were all working together.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for being here. Is there anybody else? Judge.
Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. My name is Terry Tallman. I'm Morrow County Judge. And we want to thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I want to thank you for all taking your time to travel to our part of the country and observe and see what life is like out here. And we appreciate the fact that you've taken this time to bring a committee and actually a full working committee and all the trappings that come with that to make that work. If I may, I would like to speak to the subjects that you were talking about there that relate to the racetrack that you were talking about. Sounds like that at heart we have some folks who might have a little bit of racing in their blood from, way back. And, that's interesting. I'm not a race fan, for those folks, not yet, no. But just let me say that in Morrow County, we do have a permit that has been certified. We have a 3,200-page document that says we can place a racetrack on the order of what we're talking about in Morrow County. It took us a little over 2 years to get that document in place. The Port of Morrow spent nearly $500,000 of their money, along with some developer money, in order to make that happen. And so there has been a considerable amount of time and energy spent already in trying to get a racetrack placed in Oregon. One of our major concerns, and I would say, we would first of all want to make sure that the playing field stays fair, because we had to go through the exceptions process. It took us those 2 years to get that taken care of, and I understand, I think Representative Greenlick, were you the one that said that you're on the that committee that would oversee some of that? Yes. And we just would want to make sure that the playing field stays level when you consider the placement of a site someplace else in the state. So we'd like to lay that before you. Because we still, even though there are people that are have doubts about our land use laws, they're still in effect, and we, as long as they are in effect, we'd like to see them considered when such a siting of a facility like this is considered. You know, just as a statement of fact, both the county and I'm sure the Port of Morrow will be watching very closely the process if a site gets placed somewhere else in the state of Oregon. And so we just will keep an eye on that. And because we feel like that we have quite a lot at stake. We feel like that we are actually one of the better sites in all the state of Oregon to hold a racetrack facility. And we have some of the greatest weather. We don't have as much rain as you have out there, and that's wreaks havoc with those situations. And so we just want you to know that we have some preparation in place to provide a facility. And you know, it is from Troutdale. Boardman is about 2.5 hours by car, so it isn't that far. I know of people who fly to Atlanta every year just to go to the Atlanta race that they have, the NASCAR race back there. So we'll just speak to that. And there are a lot of other issues that we could probably say something about, but in order to give others opportunity, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you very much. Are there any thoughts or questions, comments?
Mr. Chairman, I comment.
Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.
We got to be careful in asking for too much fairness, because any expenditure down in saying that would be over $50,000 would have to go down to Ways and Means, and most likely would go to Ways and Means Transportation and Economic Development. And so after it goes through our Land Use Committee, most likely it's going to go down there. So we'll be watching that very carefully.
Well, thank you.
You want to keep the stack there.
and I will tell you, our biggest competition right now is not city to city within Oregon, it's with the state of Washington.
Yes, I understand that. Yes.
So once we can get NASCAR to commit to come to Oregon...
One of our major concerns, and I would say we would first of all want to make sure that the playing field stays fair, because we had to go through the exceptions process. It took us those 2 years to get that taken care of, and I understand, I think Representative Greenlick, were you the one that said that you're on the that committee that would oversee some of that? Yes. And we just would want to make sure that the playing field stays level when you consider the placement of a site someplace else in the state. So we'd like to lay that before you. Because we still, even though there are people that are have doubts about our land use laws, they're still in effect, and we, as long as they are in effect, we'd like to see them considered when such a siting of a facility like this is considered. You know, just as a statement of fact, both the county and I'm sure the Port of Morrow will be watching very closely the process if a site gets placed somewhere else in the state of Oregon. And so we just will keep an eye on that, and because we feel like that we have quite a lot at stake. We feel like that we are actually one of the better sites in all the state of Oregon to hold a racetrack facility, and we have some of the greatest weather. We don't have as much rain as you have out there, and that wreaks havoc with the race situations. And so we just want you to know that we have some preparation in place to provide a facility. And you know, it is from Troutdale. Boardman is about 2.5 hours by car, so it isn't that far. I know of people who fly to Atlanta every year just to go to the Atlanta race that they have, the NASCAR race back there. So we'll just speak to that. And there are a lot of other issues that we could probably say something about, but in order to give others opportunity, I'll just leave it at that. Thank you very much. Were there any thoughts or questions, comments?
Mr. Chair, may I comment?
Thank you, Judge. Go ahead, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Kidd. How are you? Yeah. We got to be careful in asking for too much fairness, because any expenditure down in Salem that would be over $50,000 would have to go down to Ways and Means, and most likely would go to Ways and Means Transportation and Economic Development. And so after it goes through a land use committee, most likely it's going to go down there. So we, we'll be watching that very carefully.
Okay, thank you.
You want to keep the stack there.
And I will tell you, our biggest competition right now is not city to city within Oregon, it's with the state of Washington.
Yes, I understand that. Yes.
So once we can get NASCAR to commit to come to Oregon, and we can fund it, as Representative Smith is talking about, and then cite it. We're a ways away, so we're fighting for it.
Right. I have talked to Senator Ringo about it, so he's interested as well.
Sure he is.
Mr. Chair, can I?
Yes.
This is my second term on land use. I'm vice chair of land use in the House this year. And, you know, as a metro area Democrat, what I've learned very clearly, and Senator Ringo is my senator, is that we need to have, and we are developing, a very different perspective of how land use laws need to be applied east of the mountains from in the metro area and in the valley. And I think our committee and Senator Ringo's committee in the Senate, I think, have become very sensitive. I think Measure 37 has affected that, but last year, before Measure 37, we became very much concerned with the creation of industrial land use that made sense east of the mountains. We passed a bill to make sure some of the sites that the governor was trying to get together, the shovel-ready and certified sites, could be in places that they could be used. And it's been very instructive for me to drive through this year and last year through this kind of area and understand it's just different. And anything we can do to foster industrial development here and housing and other kinds of things, I think you'll find both of our committees and our bodies are very ready and willing to do.
Thank you. We appreciate that comment, and we may be down to talk to you when the time comes.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you very much.
Just cheer for the number 8 car. It's the red one. Stay away from 24. Representative Smith, did you have some
Well, I would just defer to our school chair, and then maybe afterwards I could introduce something.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is John Renfro, and as Greg mentioned, I'm chairman of the board of the Morrill County School District Board of Directors, and I thank the committee for permitting me a couple of minutes here. Obviously, my focus will be in on education, and surprisingly enough, I'm not going to say anything about finances or funding. You get hammered about that enough, but I have three issues that I would like to just address very quickly. One of them is the result of a resolution from our board. We're supporting statewide salary schedule program, much as in the state of Washington and other states. We feel that would be a tremendous advantage to us and our local constituents. The second thing is that I know that the School Board Association and state and others are sensitive to the issue between local autonomy of local boards and the state legislature. And we see a lot of bills that are discussed. And one question is, should the legislature enact this, for example, the change in the food service program that's currently under consideration, or should that be a local board option kind of a thing? And the third thing is that I think a bill that just passed out of committee yesterday that would give some options to 11th and 12th grade high school students that they could pursue educational opportunities beyond the standard high school as we stand now. And as I said before, I'd like to clarify, in terms of the statewide salary schedule, that is a resolution of our board, so I'm speaking on behalf of the board. The other two, I'm just personal. This is my personal opinion, and I don't represent the board on those two issues. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments.
Yes, sir.
Representative Malko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for your comments. I just had a question about the food service, because that bill caught my attention in the list of many bills that we have. How would that impact the Morrill County School District?
Well, as a matter of fact, I personally have strongly support the notion of completely revamping our food service, not only our breakfast and lunch menus, but those things that are for sale in the vending machines that's located in our buildings and so forth. And I'm a strong advocate of reducing the high sugar fat content foods that's available to our students. Now, how it would affect us, we have recently changed directors of our food service program, and the previous director, I asked about that, and they've already put some efforts into place to change menus and to consider this sort of a thing. The other key question obviously comes up is the additional revenues that's generated from the vending machines and that sort of thing. The question is, and I don't know the answer to this, and that is that if you eliminate the high sugar cults and you put in fruit juice and milk, are the sales going to go down dramatically? I don't know. I've read studies in other states where they did not. They remained essentially the same. But I know there's a lot of issues there, financial issues obviously, and I know the tremendous lobbying power in Salem. You get the vending machine companies involved and you get I guess that allows you. I don't want to take all your time.
So, Mr. Chair, if I might follow up.
Representative Dalton, in the name of time, I'm going to have to say no because Representative Smith is going to have close it out with the final topic.
Yes.
So, thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
Representative Smith, if you'd like to.
Well, thank you, Chair Kitts. It's, once again, it's an honor to have this entire committee here in Heppner. We find this to be a very special place to live, a special place to raise our family, a special place to make a living, and a special place to just have fun. One of the neat things about living in Morrill County is even with the squabbles that occur in a county, we're all family. And it's amazing how we're all there for each other. I'd share just a very quick story. I have a very big brother who's about 6'4", 6'5", weighs about 340 pounds. And I was walking down Main Street with my oldest son, and someone literally walked up to him and stopped him and said, "Grant, who is this with you?" Because they didn't know who he was, and they just wanted to make sure that my son was safe. And that's some of the special things that we have of living in rural Oregon. Now, with that said, I want to share with you a couple issues that I know are important to the folks here in Morrow County. One is our schools, and as you look around, you can tell we have great pride in our school. And you come here on any Thursday afternoon, and this gym will be full of folks who are here, you know, to watch their kids play basketball. As a matter of fact, right now, many of us are missing a track meet up in Boardman at Riverside. And so supporting our schools is important, as Representative Dolto pointed out. Economic development begins with education and starts in the elementary school and works all the way through the community colleges over to Eastern Oregon University. Next is economic development. And, you know, as you drove into town, you probably noticed that the mill was shut down. And when that mill shut down, we lost a lot of good family wage jobs, jobs that helped pay income taxes for the state of Oregon, jobs that allowed folks to own homes, jobs that allowed our community to support itself. And so, you know, we're constantly fighting to make sure we just have the basic infrastructure and the basic needs we have so we can continue to make a good living. And then third is our natural resources. And that applies to our cattlemen and to our wheat growers and to those folks up north who irrigate. For us, it's very important that we find a balance between the environment and making a living off of the land. And I just want to share with you, as you drive through here, really take a look. You're not going to find better stewards of the land than the folks here who are having to make a living off of it. And so I hope you'll just keep your eyes open, take a look at our schools, take a look at our beautiful Main Street, and take a look at those farms and ranches that we're all proud of. And once again, thank you so much for coming out here. We really appreciate this. So thank you.
You're welcome, Representative. Thank you. And with that, committee, we're adjourned.